Welcome to Panorama, the flagship news and current affairs show at CIM, where we bring you the latest and most in-depth news stories from around the world. We deliver the big stories that matter to young Australians and our diverse community. So whether you're interested in current affairs, science, entertainment, culture, or anything in between, we've got you covered. Panorama, where youth hear it first.
CIN acknowledges and pays respect to the owners of the land, the House of CIN and Studios Stand, the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nations. CIN also acknowledges and pays respect to the elders and traditional owners of the lands our content reaches, as well as the radio stations we broadcast from across the country.
Evacuations are taking place on the Hawaiian island of Maui, with wildfires roaring across the tourist hotspot. Dozens of people are needing rescuing after jumping into the ocean to escape the flames, while communications are a problem with internet and mobile towers down. Six people have been confirmed as dead, with investigations and rescues ongoing. The Consulate General in Honolulu issued an emergency proclamation for Aussies to closely monitor the situation and follow the advice of local authorities. Victorian police, investigating suspected mushroom poisonings, are now seeking CCTV footage from a tip where they found a food dehydrator. The machine is believed to have been found in a transfer bin last Friday, with detectives back at the site yesterday. This follows three people dying from a suspected mushroom poisoning, while the fourth is still fighting for life. 41 migrants have been killed in a shipwreck in the Mediterranean. The four people who survived reached an Italian island, telling rescuers they were on a boat with 45 people on board, including three children. The boat is believed to have left Tunisia on Thursday, but capsized and sank just a few hours into the trip. Proposed changes allowing 60 days medicine supply on a single script are being blocked by the coalition. The opposition fears the bill would hurt community pharmacies, but the pharmacy lobby warns the move could force some businesses to close. The changes are due to come into effect from September, with the Greens supporting the bill. The government is relying on the crossbenchers to get it through. The New South Wales Police will have to cough up compensation to a man once considered the number one suspect in the disappearance of William Turrell. Detectives accuse Bill Spedding of historical child sex abuse to pressure him to give evidence in relation to the missing three-year-old. He is now looking at a payout of $1.8 million in damages. The case has been described as the worst police prosecution ever in Australia. If any of today's headlines have impacted you, please call Lifeline on 13 11 14. And in an emergency, always call 000.
Those were the headlines for today. And now, a story from Taylor. Following the release of data collected by Australia Post on Wednesday, the large number of posties injured in accidents by a third party on the roads has company concerned. Panorama producer and reporter Taylor Oates has more.
Australia Post is urging all Aussies to keep an eye out for their local postie, with recent data showing a postie is injured by a third party on the roads at least once a week. In the past financial year, 65 posties sustained serious injuries as a result of third-party accidents, with many incidents resulting in hospital stays, time off work, and psychological trauma. Across the country, New South Wales recorded the highest number of accidents involving posties. Some of the most common third-party accidents involving posties included drivers not looking when using or speeding through roundabouts, failing to stop at a stop sign or give way sign, driving distracted by a mobile phone, or not leaving enough space to stop safely. Australia Post General Manager of Safety and Wellbeing, Rod Moulet, says to help protect posties, Australia Post has implemented some safety measures.
To help keep our posties safe, we have invested in advanced telematics with multi-angle video capability installed across around about 8,000 vehicles. Our posties wear high-vis uniforms and undertake intensive road safety training. And we've also equipped all of our new electric delivery vehicles with sensors and duress buttons, enabling us to pinpoint the location of a postie if they're involved in an emergency and help get support to them quickly.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Panorama. I'm here with Sura. I'm Alicia, and today I'll be talking about truck pollution in Melbourne's western suburbs. So, Maribyrnong Council has declared a health emergency in its municipality, citing that hospitalisations and illnesses caused by air pollution have considerably exceeded the Australian average. Maribyrnong roads are throughways for many of Victoria's most popular trucking routes, with an estimated 12 million trucks travelling through the municipality every year. Maribyrnong's industrial areas are distinctly close to local homes and schools, making residents increasingly concerned about the health and safety effects of truck pollution.
Alicia, just a quick question. How is trucking pollution affecting the health of people living in the area?
So a study by Inner West Air Quality found that Maribyrnong residents are 40% more likely to be hospitalised for asthma and 60% more likely to be hospitalised for heart failure than the average Australian. Greens councillor Bernadette Thomas moved the motion to declare an emergency health crisis and said that the community has been raising concerns regarding truck pollution for a long time. She said, "The government, who has all the leaves to change things, really needs to start taking truck pollution seriously. They've known about this for a long time, but we need them to act."
And what further changes are the Maribyrnong Council calling for?
So Councillor Thomas is calling on the government to enforce existing truck curfews. So these are times that trucks aren't meant to be travelling through roads in Maribyrnong without a permit. But Councillor Thomas is saying that there are too many exemptions being given to trucks so that these curfews aren't really having any effect. She's also saying that the government should take all the trucks off the roads and implement new low emission zones in Maribyrnong.
Wow. 40% for a hospitalisation rate for asthma is a lot.
Yeah, and it's particularly bad for children who are even more susceptible to these diseases than the average Australian. So they've been doing some studies putting air quality backpacks on kids in their areas.
Air quality backpacks?
Yeah, so they've been told to put them on during, like, when they're running around outside during, like, lunch and recess to try and see how the air quality is, because lots of these schools are right next to major roads. So it'd be really interesting to see when those results come back. So the council announced the health emergency in May, and since then there haven't been any further changes to trucking regulations. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see where this goes.
Yeah. And this is a concerning story. Like, this is definitely of concern. Do we know if there is any alternate routes that truckers can take, or is it just a one-way through?
Oh, I'm not sure particularly, but the reason that there's so many trucks in the area is because the western suburbs, and particularly Maribyrnong, are, like, historically close to ports and waterways,
yes.
So really easy to transport, like, large amounts of goods and materials. But, yeah, now that the population has risen and residential areas moving closer to the industrial area, this isn't having good health effects on the people living there.
No, not at all. And considering West is one of the only affordable suburbs left at this point in time, this is very concerning. Well, we'll keep an eye on this story. Thanks for that, Alicia. And this is time for Science with Surah. Woo! I miss Taylor's jingle. So today's story is about diamonds. So we all know that diamond mining is a very rich industry. And, you know, diamonds are diamonds. Diamonds are most people's favorite type of jewelry. But there's a new research that is proposing a theory about how diamonds are mined. How diamonds come to be in the mines. This theory is proposing how diamond-rich magma comes to the surface of the earth. We have known where to find diamonds and what they're composed of, but we have barely begun to understand how they come from the mantle to the crust.
So, Surah, how are diamonds formed?
Well, so basic science class thing, going back to high school science, diamonds are formed under immense pressure in the mantle. They are carried upwards onto the crust, onto the surface of Earth, on this magma called kimberlite. And it's the type of volcanic rock, which when magma just freezes down, it turns into a volcanic rock. And this is the rock when refined turns into diamonds. And diamonds are found in the depth of approximately 150 to 200 kilometers below the Earth's surface.
Wow, that's extremely deep. So how will this new information change the diamond industry, and what will the benefit be?
So the scientists who headed this research from the University of Southampton, they are proposing that being able to, through this research, we might precisely be able to locate where to find more diamonds. What was the study, though? The study by the University of Southampton in Texas, it used AI, statistical analysis, and machine learning to simulate the process of magma churning down and then how it essentially comes to minds. Let me rephrase that so it's a little bit more understandable. So magma is found deep, deep within the earth, right? It's like it's as diamonds are found, formed almost 200 kilometers below the earth's surface. That's where the mantle is. And this comes up to the crust, and then we have diamonds. So, yeah, this study is proposing that the magma flows inwards and flows inwards towards mines where diamonds are found. Tom Gernon, who is a professor of earth science and principal research, fellow of University of Southampton, he said that the pattern of diamond eruption is cyclic, mimicking the rhythm of the supercontinents, which assemble and break up in a repeated pattern over time. But previously, we didn't know what process caused diamond to suddenly erupt, having spent millions or billions of years stashed away 150 kilometers below the earth's surface. So what Professor Gernon is saying is that when supercontinents break up, essentially that's when diamonds are formed. That's when they are formed, and then over the millions and millions of years, they kind of migrate inwards. So yeah.
Interesting. It kind of reminds me if you're like playing Minecraft and you turn the cheat codes to find exactly where the diamonds are, and the map is just like the ground just disappears, and then you see underneath the earth exactly where the diamonds are. That's what I think of when you're telling me about this.
Oh, that would be pretty cool, actually. It's the study if the study goes on further ahead, and if the study goes on further ahead, like we might be able to precisely locate where these volcanic eruptions occurred like 20 to 30 million years ago.
Wow.
And then those might be places where we would find diamonds.
That'd be interesting to see how it affects like the sustainability of like diamond mining, considering mm-hmm. how sought after they are. And, you know, as humans, we do like to run through our natural resources. So knowing exactly where diamonds are could be interesting.
Yeah, that's the thing, though. This reading the story just made me feel like, given that diamonds take such a long time to form and, like, they're so old, millions or billions of years, we are going to run out of them. We're not going to have anything after a certain point in time. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's time for panotainment. Now, Alicia, what do you have for us in panotainment?
So, the Melbourne International Film Festival kicked off last week and will be screening from the 3rd to the 20th of August. So, I wanted to give you guys some recommendations. So, these are my top three must-see films from the festival. So, first up is How to Blow Up a Pipeline by director Danielle Goldhaber. So, it's inspired by the contentious novel by Andreas Malm. So, this is a suspenseful thriller follows a group of young environmentalists as they attempt to disrupt an oil pipeline. So, the eight devoted protesters, each with their own eco-agenda, are portrayed by a slick young cast, including Lucas Gage from White Lotus, Marcus Scribner from Blackish, and Sasha Lane from American Honey. They collaborate on a scheme to blow up a pipeline in West Texas and disrupt the oil industry. It's funny and it's fast-paced and a film I would definitely recommend. So second up is Anatomy of a Fall by Justine Triet, the 2023 winner of the illustrious Palme d'Or Award at Cannes Film Festival. Triet is only the third woman to ever take out the festival's top prize, which is crazy considering how long mm-hmm. this film festival has been going on. So the story follows a woman accused of killing her husband, who's then put on trial for his death. She must face public scrutiny while defending and explaining herself to a world audience. Part true crime legal thriller and part family drama, the film is a thrilling story about perception, truth and ambition. And then third in my recommendations is Past Lives by Korean-Canadian writer and director Celine Song. A remarkable debut and a broadly autobiographical film, it tells the story of Nora, a character who moves from Korea to Canada as a child and later makes a life in the United States. As a 30-something living in New York City with her writer husband Arthur, she's visited by Hae-sung, her childhood sweetheart, causing her to contemplate what would life have been like if she had not left.
Oh my God. Past Lives has been on my list for so long. Like, I cannot wait to see this movie, but I keep missing out on tickets. I missed out on the film festival, on the Melbourne Film Festival. I know they're all sold out now. And I keep missing out on them, so I cannot wait for this one to come out. People have told me this has been, like, the best thing they have seen all year.
Yeah, I'm so excited. I haven't seen it yet, but
But you did go to see how to blow up a pipeline.
Yeah, and it was really good. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I wasn't really sure, because kind of when you go to a film festival, like, I'm usually someone who sticks to, like, the big, like, blockbuster releases. Yeah. So sometimes film festival, like, films can be a lot different.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I loved the movie. And I'm so excited to go to the rest of the
films. I can't wait for it either. Like, I say this having not bought any tickets to film festival films because I have just been so busy. But whenever these ones get wider release, I'll be sure to check out How to Blow Up a Pipeline, because that honestly sounds so much fun.
Yeah. So what's going on in Panettainment for you, Sura?
Okay. So we haven't kept a big secret of it. I'm a huge Swiftie, and Taylor Swift just released the date for her 1989 Taylor's version, and it's coming out on October 27th, 2023. If you can see me now, I'm actually shaking a little bit because I'm really excited. This 1989 has been my favorite album. And the funny thing is that she released the original 1989 in 2014. So that's like, what, 9 years ago on the same date, on October 27th. So, yay! This obviously comes after Taylor Swift, who has been re-recording her albums after her masters were sold to another label. And 1989 counts as the fourth re-release.
Interesting. Now, this must take in some meticulous planning from Taylor Swift, because I'm pretty sure she announced this at a concert, which was today, Australian time, but yesterday on the 9th for Americans,
yeah,
where she was finishing off her, was it finishing off her tour?
Yes. So yeah, she has finished the first leg of her American tour in LA.
Yeah. On the 8th of the 9th. She thinks about this stuff.
She thinks about this stuff like 3 or 4 years in advance from the interviews that I have.
Yeah. Have people guessed, like, have, if you're, like, in the Swifty community, have people guessed that they were gonna, like, she was going to do this from when she released the dates?
I think that 27th of October being the release date for 1989 was a very popular guess.
Yeah.
But I think that her releasing it on yesterday's show was a little bit eh. Like, we knew something big might happen because it's the last show of her U.S. leg, U.S. tour. So, yeah. I mean, surprise everywhere.
Yeah, I'm sure there was some incredibly happy people in that audience. And even hearing, maybe even listening now. Your Swifties in the audience. Might be tears coming out of your eyes. I don't know.
Listen, I haven't had the time to process it yet because I just heard about this like 20 minutes before the show started, and I haven't had the time to see the announcement or anything yet. So on the way back home.
Breaking news.
Yeah, it's going to be me crying on the trams like, yay, finally. Okay. And that was it for today's show. Thanks for joining us, folks. As always, you can find us on Instagram at Panorama, and all the episodes from this season can be found on our Spotify as well. Just look up Panorama Sin. And thanks. Have a good day.